79 Neil Larson, Julie Mason, and State Representative Marco Erickson joining us in studio. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning.
Cowboy hat and everything today. Love
just,
it.
So. Just my normal look, I guess.
Yeah, it's my favorite version.
Yes, and I think you're getting set. You're a perennial performer at the Eastern Idaho State Fair, and we were just talking about that. My daughter also performs, and you've got a couple of slots at the fair this year.
Yeah, I'm doing a 6 o'clock on Monday, which is Labor Day, so that ought to be fun. It's a holiday, and then Friday on September 11th at 2 o'clock.
So okay.
A couple good shows going on.
Well, good luck to you. I know you love doing that.
So. It's a fun hobby. It's a stress reliever for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're just having lawmakers in. We want to chat with them about the upcoming legislative session. We've got some big ballot initiatives and things that are happening. So how has your summer gone in terms of being a lawmaker, and what have you been working on?
Well, I was traveling all summer for lawmaking stuff. You know, I did a lot travel Medicaid policy and going and dealing with council state government. I have a role there. I'm a chairman, and I think my term's going to end this year, but they're looking to have me be the potential future. I don't know. My colleagues are asking me to run for their president, and what it does in the council state government is they keep it politically neutral, and it's really nice because it switches back and forth. It'll be a Democrat president, and then it'll be a Republican president. So the next one is in Alaska, it's a Democrat, and then next year after that it'll be Hawaii Republican.
Okay.
And then it's a Democrat from Washington state, and then in 2030 it would be Idaho if I ran, and yeah, it would be Idaho. And you know, most likely it'd be really cool to see my colleagues vote for me and accept me and have me be their president. Yeah. And when we would host the event here in Idaho Falls. So that would be kind of neat and unique.
Oh, that'd be fun.
We'd have legislators and a lot of fun content for you guys, bringing in some people from all over the country, the western part of the country.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of neat.
Yeah. Okay, so we did get some news this week that there seems to be a little bit more coming in. Money-wise, revenue for the state, and you were really vocal about trying to keep some of the programs for children that potentially were going to be cut in this last legislative session. So with some additional revenue, what are you hoping in your realm that could be restored?
Yeah, I don't know about what we're going to restore. I just think that we definitely need to pay attention to that funding source from META and what we can do for children. And there were some provisions in there. It was supposed to be used for children and families. So I just think there'll be many ideas. And I'm ready to listen to all the ideas. I've gotten several emails from people saying, do this. And I just, you know, I'm the kind of lawmaker. I don't know exactly what to do yet. But it would be nice to watch it really closely and try to make sure it goes to children and youth and their families and supporting those services as we move forward.
So, Marco, what do you think are going to be the big issues coming up in the legislative session? Because I know that education, obviously, is always a big issue. There's seems to be big changes in education now and a desire for change. Property taxes may be on the docket as well. So tell us what you're anticipating the legislature is going to be focusing on.
Yeah, like you just said, tax policy is going to be huge, especially property tax and the way to do that. Because I think everybody would love to see property tax gone. Just how to do that and how to approach it. That's going to be the argument. How do you keep things whole and not make too big of a splash, you know?
Yeah.
And talking to Scott, he Herndon, he wants to just eliminate it, but didn't have a replacement revenue. So that is an issue. That'll be a big one. And surprisingly, flock cameras have been an issue that I know is coming up. And then I was talking with some of my colleagues, and there's already a bill written. You know?
So okay.
I know there's things coming down the pipeline there because I was asking about it. Because it's, I mean, our citizens are mentioning it daily. And so that's something that I've talked with a lot of local leaders about that issue, is because I told them, hey, you know this is coming. You get ahead of it. You know, do some PR. If you guys don't have very good support right now, so you're not going to, you know, we're not going to go against all of our citizens on that. And most of us don't like some of those things happening there. So that one's going to be a fun conversation.
So I know already Idaho, I think it was in 2025, they did pass a law about these license plate readers, what they can be used for. And I thought they put some pretty clear parameters on it. What additionally do you think we might see in a bill coming forward?
Well, I don't know, but it could be an all out ban.
Okay.
And not allow that in Idaho. I mean, that, I know there'll be some opposed to it that are really hot, powerful lobbyists in Boise, but at the same time, the public is not having it. That's not the item of the way. And so it's going to, I mean, I, like I said, I've had many, many conversations, and I love listening to people and hearing them out. But when it's mostly negative towards those things, there's a serious problem. And the public does not like being surveillanced or feeling like that's happening in any way. So.
Do you, I mean, have you formed your own opinion on this of what you'd like to see happen with
my children and I have conversations all the time because I have young, young kids or young adults, right? So those conversations come up daily. Yeah, and that generation is 100% against it.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to support law enforcement, but I haven't found a reason that that's really good for Idaho yet. So my personal opinion, I don't like them too much either, just like everybody
else. So you got a skeptical view of them right now.
Yeah. Well, and it's maybe that's what needs to happen is it needs to be very clear. If you misuse these, it's a felony. You know, if you don't care if you're an officer. We don't care who you are. If you're misusing these in a way that's benefiting you personally, I don't know. I don't know if that's a solution that's good enough. Because
Julie and I are on record. They should lose their pension and their job.
I think if you put the money on the line, you get really good behavior.
Yeah. You need to not allow any misuse. And without a warrant, people shouldn't access our information. There's no reason for that. So, there's things like that that could be. I haven't seen the bill, but I know there's been one written.
And
you
could
probably guess which legislators have written that. But
okay. Well, let's go to the November election. We do have an important ballot initiative on the ballot. It's Prop 1. And we're asking all of our lawmakers that important question, which way will you be voting on Prop 1 and how would you interpret the current law in Idaho?
Well, it's simple. That's an easy no. Everybody should vote no on Prop 1. It goes way too far. And we all know that those conversations, to have a child be able to go and have an abortion and have your name. There's reasons we put those laws in place to protect families and their values and their rights, and especially parents. And for us to be able to have a neighbor take a child and go give an abortion and not have any repercussions against the parents' will, that's going further backwards than we were before. And so that's definitely. And there's just so many reasons to vote no. The way they wrote that, that's just a part of the problem with some of these. Not that I'm 100% against citizen initiatives, but when they write them, they write them in their favor. And they, you know, the last one for even the marijuana one was written to benefit one particular business in a big way. And those people are going to make tons of money on this stuff. And so if you follow the money, you know, people have common sense. And that bill is very clear. We need to vote against that Prop 1.
So it's easy then to shift into. After you talk about Prop 1, and by the way, Julie and I are very much opposed to it. We're happy to hear that you're full-throated opposed to Prop 1 as well. But you talk about Idaho's current abortion law. There are some lawmakers that, even those that are pro-life, that feel like it might need to be tweaked because it is creating some concern among the medical community. I know there's a lot of talk about doctor retention. I think doctor retention is a much more complex issue than what Idaho's abortion law happens to be, though that's what they want to boil it down to. But do you think Idaho's current law needs to be at least tweaked a little bit? Not changed completely, but at least maybe revisit the language a little bit to create some more clarity and comfort among the medical community?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. I spent a lot of time chatting with those people, the doctors, and also, you know, in my role in health and welfare as the vice chairman. And here's what we get very clearly is the language. There's no doctors in our area that have ever been performing elective abortions. And the key language is the difference that the public has to understand. There's a difference between an elective abortion and a non-viable pregnancy. And so there's all these medical anomalies, and they're not really defined in the code or in the law in a way that protects the physician. And so that's what they worry about. They worry about being called baby killers because they're not. And they're like, I would never, every doctor I talk to, I would never perform an elective abortion. You know, so that's really clear. People have to understand the difference but there's cases where there's really severe fetal issues, and those doctors and those patients have that conversation. And in those cases, we need to clearly define what that means so that the public and the general public understands that. And it's definitely never going to go down to the point where they're performing elective abortion. So I think that's a decent solution without having to change the law, because we still want to protect life and the sanctity of life.
I think there's a fear among those of us that are pro-life that if you do that, you run the risk of creating a loophole for doctors that are looking for a way to be able to commit an abortion or for a mother to be able to have one. And so there's the loophole problem that I think a lot of people are leery of. I think there's a general consensus that doctors acting in good faith should never be prosecuted if it's truly a non-viable pregnancy or a miscarriage situation.
Yeah, and again, that's the issue we are as legislators and lawmakers, is those loopholes are really tough to close. How do you do that properly? I mean, there's been a couple bills proposed. I haven't seen them. And so, you know, I can't comment on anything I haven't read or seen yet. But again, yeah, those are the conversations we're having, because we're actively seeking solutions. And you hear data on both sides of those arguments. And it's funny because people skew their data. They're like, well, this group, we've seen this many more doctors come into Idaho. And you're like, yeah, but they're not full-time equivalents. So if you think about that, when you have, and I asked them, I said, tell us the number of full-time equivalency doctors who are performing, you know, birthing for the mothers. Because if they're a traveling doctor and they're licensed in Idaho, that doesn't mean we've increased capacity. That just shows that we have another license. And that's sometimes what they're using as data points, and that's not right. Because if you don't have a full-time doctor that's seeing that mother in that clinic, you know, then we know there's a problem or a shortage.
Okay, but on the other end, because I agree with you, I think that a lot of games can be played with the data. When Boise State is not forthcoming with their data after it's been requested, they're legally required to put it forward, but they're not telling us how they arrived at the data point that a third of Idaho's doctors have left.
I just don't believe that.
It's equally sketchy, you know.
Yeah. That's why I say it happens on both sides. Almost every one of these initiatives, and that's the problem in general, is you'll hear a story on the radio, like the Prop 1 one. You're hearing these stories and you're like, oh, goodness gracious, that didn't happen. Or if it did, it was because you were misinformed about the law. So it frustrates people who are inside of that, having those conversations every day. It really frustrates us because we're like, people are, you know, this, and not to pick on lawyers, but lawyers tend to interpret laws a little to their advantage sometimes to get some additional support in their financial buckets.
What about the constitutional amendment that would put marijuana policy and other drug policy firmly in the hands of the legislature, and no longer could it be a voter initiative?
Well, I've been telling everybody I'm in favor of that from the beginning. And I get a lot of flack on that, but to me, it's just better to protect our state from stuff like marijuana and other drugs. And for us to be able to pass that initiative will be helpful. There's a reason that it went overwhelmingly through the House. It's not to get more power. It's really to protect the citizens and keep our state the way it is. Because, again, these citizens' initiatives come forward. And that one that was written, had it got on the ballot, it would have been really sad, because it was really to benefit one or two businesses. And even when we passed the hemp law, we allowed them to do hemp. They started using that product for things they knew they shouldn't be doing. It was sold one way and then clearly used in other ways. And so it's frustrating.
Could you envision, Marco, a narrowly tailored medicinal marijuana policy in Idaho? So it's tightly regulated, only people truly with medical conditions, not a headache, not a hangnail, but they actually have a medical condition like cancer.
Epilepsy.
Yeah.
Well, we already have that. That's the thing. I've been a part of approving Epidiolex and you know, you have Nabiximols. They're actual research drugs that are a derivative of the marijuana plant. And so but it's not something you smoke, right? It's a nasal spray or it's an oil. And that's the key. When you go down that route, I've been a part of drug policy and drug.
This
for 30 years of my career, I've watched it happen. I've paid attention to every state as this happened. I was in Nevada when it happened. I worked for the drug policy group in the state of Nevada. So to see it come in, and the tax revenue was like $60 million, and everybody's like, oh, see, it was so great. And then I'm like, yeah, but you didn't realize I put $150 million out the door. That's what it cost me for the repercussions of that. And then we, you know, there were some benefits to it. Like the mothers started saying, yeah, I smoked weed when they had babies. And we were able to track some of those over time, do some really good epidemiological reports on marijuana effects on pregnancy. Stuff like that was good and useful because they weren't afraid to say, yeah, I did that. But it's not a good policy to bring into our state.
Yeah. Okay. We'll leave it at that. Representative Marco Erickson, do you have an opponent?
I do. I don't worry about that stuff too much.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
I think the primaries are when we fight it out here in Idaho really well.
We won't say any names. We actually had a candidate in that didn't even know the name of their opponent, which was pretty
That's funny. Great. So. Yeah. That tells you something.
Yeah. All right. 7:48 on News Talk 107.9.